Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk. I'm Olivia Potts.
And I'm Laura Prendergast.
Today we are joined by Jessie Burton. Jessie is the author of the smash hit best-selling The Miniaturist and The Muse. Her new book, The Confession, which is out now, is split between 1980s LA and present-day London. It's a beautiful and gripping examination of mothers and daughters, identity, love, loss and secrets. Jessie, welcome to Table Talk.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Jessie, you grew up in Wimbledon in London. What was food like when you were little?
My parents were quite adventurous, really. They often would go to France with me and, you know, feed me all sorts of things. I had quite a sophisticated palate, so anything they ate, I would sort of be offered. I do remember hating fruit. I don't think I tried an apple or an orange until I was potentially in the sixth form. So my parents weren't strict, but I loved vegetables. And Mum would, you know, she'd just whip things together. I would be a bit mean about it and sort of, I would worry what this thing was, this ragu or some kind of unidentifiable thing. But it was always quite ambitious. And I was never allowed McDonald's. That would have been, for me, the height of sophistication, getting a Happy Meal. But Mum wouldn't let me. So it was, we would always eat together. I'm an only child and food would be quite a important fixture, really, in the house. But I was never really encouraged to cook myself. I just ate whatever was given me, really.
And what about school food? Do you have happy memories of it?
I was a packed lunch girl. I didn't do the school dinners. Again, that would have been my dream to have a kind of, you know, I was before the whole school dinners being revamped sort of thing. So it was sort of horrible, unidentifiable, regurgitated chicken.
Lovely.
Yeah, and very flaccid chicken. And awful fries and things like that. So, no, packed lunch. But my father used to pack my lunches and was quite indulgent. So it would be Cadbury's chocolate fingers, chocolate mousse, Mighty White sandwiches, crisps. Other people would have the satsuma and the raisins and just look at me and be like, well, you're living in paradise. I didn't really like the school dinner's smell. It was awful. So I actually quite enjoyed my own lunches.
And denied McDonald's and the school lunches.
It was a brutal life.
I know, it sounds awful. What was your favourite food as a child that you were allowed?
My favourite food? I loved things like baked Alaska and apple crumble with ice cream.
Old school puddings.
Yeah. I like that sort of thing. I like lasagna. With the crispy, as long as it was crispy on top. I quite liked Italian food, all that sort of, you know, pizza, pasta. I suppose that's sort of nursery food, though. It's quite sort of simple, but also it was warming.
But you say, I mean, you had a sophisticated palate. Were you, when you went on holiday to France and places like that, you weren't picky, you would just eat whatever?
I would eat anything, yeah.
Where were you in France?
I remember my first birthday, we went to Provence. Ooh. But my parents really loved Brittany, so we'd go there quite a lot. So I suppose quite a lot of seafood, fish featured heavily. And my parents' best friends in England, Mark and Angela, Mark was the cook, and he would always make quite beautiful gammon. And at Christmas, I remember eating that. And so, you know, I would always eat that. I was never given a sort of children's plate.
And how about university? You went to Oxford, you're at Brasenose College. What was food like when you got there? Did you cook for yourself at all?
I mean, that was shocking when I felt
Brave New World.
I know. Well, my first year, I couldn't get my head around the fact that I didn't really have access to my own kitchen. Not that I was a cook, but just I couldn't get food when I wanted. So I remember buying a Breville toasty maker, and I do remember,
surely that was against the college rules.
Well, I have no idea, but what I do know is that a queue would form and people would say, Jess, can I have a cheese toasty? Because I was never up in time for breakfast being served in college. I was always too late. So then there was a little cafe called Gertie's in Brasenose, which was again toasties and all that. I put on so much weight in the first term. Yeah, I think I must have spent a lot of money on restaurants. There was a restaurant called Quad, which I think we again thought was the height of sophistication. But yeah, food wasn't food wasn't really high on the list of priorities in my certainly first, second and third year. By my fourth year, I think I would have really liked my own kitchen and eaten better. But I didn't eat well at university.
And after university, your first career was as an actress.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant to ask, but what was the diet like of a young actress?
Oh,
living in London, presumably.
Air and dust. I don't know. I mean, I lived in East London in a flat share. And I, besides acting, I was a temp. Mm-hmm. So again, it would be just a very plain breakfast and then a grabbed lunch. But then it would be if someone's parents wanted to take us out for dinner, then you'd sort of take advantage of actually having some delicious food. But yeah, I don't really remember the food wasn't, again, it wasn't a great priority. I didn't really come round to understanding how pleasurable preparing your own food or eating widely can be until more recently. So it's a weird circle, like from my mum being very ambitious with her world cooking, like her curries and all sorts of things that she would make that I ate, but was also a bit sort of like, why can't I have some chicken nuggets like all the other children? To now and my late 20s and now my mid 30s, where I'm a bit more interested and excited by food. But certainly in my 20s, honestly, it was just cigarettes and alcohol. I'm not going to lie.
When you were writing The Miniaturist, it was whilst you had your other job.
Yeah, yeah.
And you, I remember reading you sort of writing it on the tube and sort of whenever you could snatch bits of time. I mean, what was your life like then? I mean, was it kind of a bit peripatetic?
It was just like that. And it was the putting together of the novel was very patchwork. It's a little like my life at the time. I mean, juggling, you know, temp work with going to auditions and then maybe getting the job and then everything changing again and life changing very quickly. It was a time of, I mean, I say upheaval, but it was just constant sort of upheaval and hoping and dreaming. I mean, it sounds easy to sort of apply a retroactive sort of retrospective narrative to it. But it was like, I suppose, many people's 20s. You are not where you think you want to be career wise, maybe even personal life wise. You're just sort of, you're not drifting, you're sort of striving. And so everything was sort of on the hoof, you know, writing the book on my phone on the way into jobs, in theatre dressing rooms, you know, backstage. I do have several friends who are still in the acting business who have remembered me writing in the dressing room.
Did they know what you were writing at that point?
I think I told them I was writing a book, but I don't know if I told them in great detail what it was about. But yeah, it sort of happened bit by bit, and you know, when I wasn't looking or wasn't concentrating really.
Mm. The Miniaturist, I mean, it features sugar quite
a lot.
And marzipan.
Yeah.
And I know that you researched old Dutch cookbooks.
Yeah,
you're
The Sensible
Can you tell
Cook.
Us about that? Yeah.
I loved that book. Yeah, it was such a gem to find in the research process because it sort of was a direct connection to the people, what they're eating, how they prepared their food, how they viewed their seasonal experience of life, you know, storing, pickling.
How dictated it was.
Exactly, yeah, because of course they didn't have, well, they did have ice houses.
Yes.
But it was so helpful and it was really lovely because the character of Cornelia, who is the maid and the cook in the household in Amsterdam in 17th century in the book, her cooking and her preparing of food, particularly her sweets for the family, it was just such a nice, in a book that has many darknesses, I suppose, it was such a nice space to create the warmth of the kitchen and the preparation of her sweets and also her savoury food, but how important it was to the family. But that book was just so revealing about the way that they lived and how and what they ate. I mean, some of the recipes were so disgusting. I mean,
tell us.
Oh, sort of sturgeon stuffed with, you know, carrot. And
Sturgeon's bad enough,
I know,
to be honest.
It's just the word itself. Yeah, there were lots. I can't quite remember all of them because it was a big book. Mm. And they say it was the first, I don't know if it's true, but I think it was one of the first recipe books that was written down and published with the idea of sharing, you know, a recipe book, making
nice.
A book. Yeah. It doesn't surprise me because the Dutch were pretty forward thinking, mm-hmm. and the printing presses there were pretty advanced. And particularly books were not regulated, and so much was by the guilds, but book selling, bookmaking wasn't. So you could get a lot of naughty books in Holland at the time, including The Sensible Cook.
Yeah. Did you find the artwork from that time helpful as well? Because obviously when you think of Dutch painting, it's the Dutch Golden Age, all these amazing still lives that you can kind of really see what they're eating. And all these amazing things that they're bringing back through trade.
Yeah.
I mean, was that a useful resource as well?
Totally. And I think, you know, the Dutch had money at that time. They were so wealthy enough to paint their food. I mean, it really was like nowadays Instagrammers taking photos of their meals before they devour them. It was an extension of your status to paint your lobster with a droplet of moisture on its claw, but also your lemon going rotten to sort of remind yourself that life is fleeting and, you know, don't indulge yourself too much, but look how lovely my lemons are. I'm so wealthy, I can paint them. And they were so obsessed with documenting their lives to that minutiae. That when I came to it at the turn of the 21st century, it was like it was yesterday.
When I remember reading your book, and it felt like, actually when I saw the TV production, it felt exactly how I'd imagined it.
Yeah.
And the kind of, I suppose, because you had that sort of all of that detail.
Yeah. And I think those paintings, particularly somebody like Vermeer, who really set up his paintings, the light, it was all artificial, it was theatrical, it was a fakery in a way. You know, the girls were wearing costumes, everything was really, there is that performative element, that theatrical element that if you are making a TV show or indeed writing a novel, actually makes it quite easy to access.
But then you also look, in the miniaturist, at the sort of more introspective side of food. I think one of the characters says it's where we truly find ourselves and that it reminds me he's capable of delight.
Oh, yes, and Johannes eating the crab. Oh, yeah.
Is that something you buy into?
Oh, I do. I think food... other people be far more articulate about it than I could be, but I think there's a true delight in eating and sharing food and tasting it and having someone make something for you or making something for someone else. I've always found comfort in food and a sort of celebratory element. I think there is a lot of pastry and confectionery in the miniatures, and that is because I truly find it delightful. I find it delightful to look at.
My kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, Liv actually made me a cake for my boyfriend's birthday, a dinosaur cake. And it was just this, it's such a beautiful
just
thing.
Just like you see in the Dutch Masters.
They love dinosaur cakes.
They really
do. So many of them in Vermeer painting.
That's where the inspiration came from.
Exactly. But I mean, you know, that for me, it was like a piece of art, and it was delicious. It was to be devoured, so it was this fleeting thing. It doesn't last, but it gives so much pleasure in the moment. And I think that Johannes particularly is a man who appreciates good food, appreciates the moment. He's not somebody who's concerned with his legacy, with worrying about the future, with dwelling on the past. And I think the act of eating a decent meal, even a delicious meal, is about savouring the moment and being in the present moment. You can't leave a plate of delicious food to congeal.
No, you have to eat it now. You have to eat it. It just seems like such a healthy point of view. Someone said to me a while ago when I did a wedding cake, oh, it must be awful when you see people cut into it. And I thought, no, that's the best part.
Exactly.
That's the point where everyone gets to share in it rather than just look at it.
I agree. I feel the same if I see someone, you know, a battered copy of one of my books or it's been dropped in the bath.
That's exactly what you want.
I love that. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, you've incorporated that into your existence.
Yeah.
And across your books, I mean, do you find food to be a sort of useful literary device in that respect?
I mean, I suppose The miniaturist is the one where it really dominates, and I think that's because it's a very domestically set book, and it's, you know, there's a lot of time for Cornelia to use cooking as a displacement activity to reveal secrets. In the Muse, they don't get to eat much. There's quite a lot of poverty, and actually there's a lot of champagne drinking rather than eating food. So I think it was specific to the miniaturist, really. And in the new one, again, food isn't sort of...
Oh, I love the food bits in the new one, though.
What are there? I'm so bad, I can't even...
the way in which Rose is cooking for Connie.
Oh, yes.
Because she's not just a cook, obviously.
What's she cooking for?
Well, she cooks a variety of things. I mean, there are some things I can't say without spoilers, but at one point she cooks some gorgeous Italian food,
yeah,
a description
right.
of pizza
yeah.
dough.
Yeah.
And all Connie, well, she does want good food, but she's also got a really sweet tooth for biscuits. And I loved her
biscuit tin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that what happens with Con is that she, when Rose enters her life, Connie is subsisting on nursery food. Mm. She'll just literally eat a piece of bread and butter and some old cheese from the fridge and a cup of coffee. And I think that's quite a writer thing. I mean, obviously we should all eat well and nourish ourselves, but sometimes if I'm left to my own devices, I'll do that. And so Rose comes into her life and actually feeds her properly.
And they eat together.
And again, I think, because perhaps it's not the actual food itself or the tastes or, you know, the sophistication of whatever the meal is. It's the act of preparing the food and sharing it that allows conversations to come out that wouldn't necessarily come out if you were just facing someone.
Yes, it's when a lot of the intimate conversations happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Thank you.
I love that. I know I've got an eye for looking at food descriptions, but I particularly enjoyed the descriptions of Rose cooking, really, and being in Connie's kitchen in North London. And
It's a beautiful kitchen as well, and it's so typical that Con has this gorgeous kitchen that's not really
used.
It's
just got a biscuit in it,
And some terrible mugs from the 80s.
So when you are writing, I mean, what do you eat? I mean, are you sort of just picking whenever you can, or does it depend on how much you've written?
Try and make sure I eat properly, because otherwise it would become a sort of a sugar fest of just biscuits and, oh, well, you know, you wrote 500 words and it was really hard, so you should have 3 penguin bars. It is, and actually my partner Sam is a phenomenal cook, and he cooks for us every day and really makes sure I have proper food, because honestly I would just poach a bit of salmon, eat a leaf, and that would be my pattern, whereas we have proper, he stews things and we have big curries and beef bourguignon and casseroles in winter and, you know,
all the good stuff.
So, but I definitely, things slide a bit when I'm writing if I'm not careful.
What's your grown-up comfort food then?
Oh, I mean, that's the thing, they're not very grown-up. It's like mini cheddars and things like that. I love pastries so much, and cakes and cookies with the chocolate chips melting in them.
Sweet tooth.
Yeah, definitely have a sweet tooth. But I also quite like sort of things like cheese straws. Honestly, anything that's sort of easily dispensable from a box. Nothing that requires any prep.
And what about drinking? Do you like to have a drink occasionally?
I try not. Yeah, I mean, I do love drinking. I do try not to drink too much when I'm working, because I'm very prone to hangovers. Even a couple of glasses of wine will make me feel very dull. I never drink whilst writing, because that doesn't work. I think it's a bit of a kind of mythology of writing that you need a sort of glass of wine or a whiskey. I mean, maybe it works for some people, I don't know. But I have more recently tried to cut back, actually, on my... I mean, not that I was ever a big consumer. And I really noticed the difference between my generation and say, my parents' generation, for whom it's not really a big thing to sort of have a bottle of wine a night, which for me, I mean, I would be corpulent and sort of, like, I just...
It's funny how that's changed.
It's really changed, yeah.
And what about, I mean, you've lived your whole life in London, where they're, you know, we're spoilt for choice with restaurants.
Yeah.
Where, if you're going out for a meal, what sort of thing do you like? Is there anywhere particularly you go, or a cuisine that you
There's no particular cuisine. I'm a big fan of Andrew Edmonds in Lexington Street. I love that restaurant, partly because of just the atmosphere, and it feels very old London. Mm. I recently discovered, down in Southeast London where I live, a South African fusion restaurant called Kudu. Mm-hmm. And that food is amazing.
Wow, what sort of thing do you guys have?
Well, oh goodness, we had, and this is now where I cannot remember. I did actually take a photo of the menu, but of course I've forgotten. Octopus. I remember I had octopus potje, P-O-T-J-E. My South Africans is not great.
No, that was beautiful.
But that was really, really good. And they have this amazing bread that you sort of break. It's quite like, is it with labneh you eat it?
Yeah.
It's that soft, slightly brioche-y. So I'm really a big fan of kudu. I love pasta, so I like padella in Borough Market. Mm-hmm. I'm always willing
just
to queue.
Opened another branch.
Oh, really?
As
where?
Oh, I can't remember, but as of today.
Oh, cool.
They've just announced a new one.
Good knowledge.
Yeah. I saw it from Ed.
Yeah, I just like those restaurants which are small, where there are two sittings. The decor has been very individually done. And there's a sort of sense of pride in it. And you can, you know, I love that. Especially, I'll say, out of the centre of London. Mm-hmm. So, you know, zone two or zone three. These one-off restaurants where someone's thrown their heart and soul and they're busy. Mm. You know, that's wonderful. Mm. I love that.
And what about travel? I mean, a lot of your books are, parts of them are set abroad. And yeah. Do you like to travel, and have you sort of discovered lots of food through that?
I think I do. And I think one of my best discoveries is recently Mexico, Mexico City particularly. But I do love that cuisine, the ceviche and the sort of the sourness, but also that spiciness, like good tacos, good burritos. But I'd like to go back to Japan, actually, and give that another. I went when I was just 18 with my university doing a play, and I was completely at sea. I was very homesick and a bit intimidated. And I think I'd like to go back now with a bit more self-possession and perhaps a bit more open-mindedness to sushi, because back then it was, I couldn't really stomach it.
In terms of the settings of your books, Lara mentioned they're sort of set all over the place. Did you spend time in LA or I mean New York or Holland when you were doing these? But are you stuck in the culture and the food scene while you're doing it?
I think with the Miniaturist, really because of circumstance, I couldn't go to Holland. I went there for 3 days. In total of writing the book.
Amazing, because you make it seem so real.
Thank you.
And there's the Doll's House display. It's in the Rijksmuseum.
It's in the Rijksmuseum, yeah. But then with The Muse is set in South Spain. And I actually lived in Cadiz, down in the southwest tip of Spain, for a year as part of my degree. So that's fused into my writing. And then with The Confession, I did spend time in LA and I spent time in Mexico and New York. I've been many times since because of my books. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, absolutely. When I'm there, I want, you know, it's a bit cliche, but I want to eat what they eat and drink what they drink, even if I think it's disgusting. Brain juice or whatever, brain on, which I describe in LA, you know, one of those neural drinks that you know, taste like sludge, but you're told that for $20 it's going to make you really clever.
Have you tried sturgeon stuffed with horrible things?
I haven't gone that far. Although Sam, when the TV series of The Miniaturist was aired on Boxing Day, he took it upon himself to make poffertjes, which are the sweet pancakes.
Yeah.
So we had that and marzipan, which was adorable.
For the viewing.
Do you like marzipan?
I don't like marzipan.
I love marzipan, but lots of people really hate it.
You know, one of the side effects of The Miniaturist was lots of people buying me marzipan and I had to, you know, graciously accept it and then give it to my dad, who loves it. But yeah, no, not a fan. Not a fan. But I am a fan of the poffertjes, which were, you know, you can still get them in Albert Kuip Market down in central Amsterdam. Yeah, and they still make them in the griddles.
Or you just need a good boyfriend who will, exactly. Will make it for you.
And I don't think he used the Sensible Cook recipe. There was no sign of sturgeon or good. Pig's tripe or whatever.
Jessie, thank you so much for joining us. And The Confession is out now.
Thank you for joining us on The Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to The Spectator website.